Well, what do you do when your waterfowl collection gets too big? Well, for our next guest, they opened a museum. Larry Mueller here visiting with Craig and Nicole Swenson. They've established the Flyways Waterfowl Museum, located near Devil's Lake in Baraboo, Wisconsin. Craig's an avid outdoorsman. He's hunted waterfowl all over the North American continent, including and elsewhere, including the Bering Sea. As Nicole has a master's degree in land resources from UW-Madison and is the museum's director. So we'll talk about the museum with them, and we'll talk about certainly waterfowl with them both. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Do you what are the unusual water birds in your area? Maybe you have questions about hunting waterfowl. Maybe you've been to the museum. Join in. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Nicole Swenson, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
And, hi, Larry.
Hi. Thanks for being with us. And, Craig, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for having us.
Craig, what is it about waterfowl that attracts you?
Well, I think it's the mystique of the, you know, the waterfowl, and in particular, like, the sea ducks in the habitat they live in, and their migration of these birds is so dramatic, and you know, it's just like any other bird, but the traveling, and it's just the greatness of being outdoors with them, I guess. It's just a great phenomena to experience.
And what prompted you to start collecting waterfowl art?
Well, years ago, you know, the colors and the variations of all the birds, you know, we collect the species and we also collect the art. It's just so striking in the how beautiful a black and white bird can be, or how beautiful the colors of the, particularly the males in the breeding season, can be. And it's just one of nature's finest artworks.
You know, you think about the North American waterfowl species. What do we got? Dabbling ducks, we got diving, we've got sea ducks, and then there's swans and geese, I think, are the five categories. Mm-hmm. And the sea ducks, there are some really beautiful. Here in Wisconsin, of course, we see buffleheads and golden eyes, or eiders maybe.
Occasionally in Lake Michigan, yeah.
Yeah, maybe eiders. But what determines a sea duck?
Well, basically, the sea ducks are very unique in their habitat and in their history. The sea ducks, there's 15 basic sea ducks, but three of them seem to migrate quite a bit further than the rest of them, like the hooded merganser, the common golden eye, and the bufflehead, typically, in the old squaw. They migrate up and down the flyways a lot more than the other sea ducks, where they tend to stay in the northern temperate zones, and they don't travel far from their wintering grounds to their summering grounds. And the biggest distinction probably in the sea ducks is their bills. They're adapted to eat more plant animal matter, they rather eat animals, you know, like your crustaceans, your snails, mm-hmm. your freshwater shrimp and things like this, rather than plant food like a lot of the other ducks eat. And that's one of the big distinguishing factors, because the bills are made to go underwater, you know, and to root out the snails and to pull mussels out of the beds and stuff like this, and actually crush some of them with their bills, or else they digest them to their gizzards, where they're dissolved and crushed, where the other ducks don't have quite the unique bill structure as the sea ducks do. So that really is what distinguishes them. And the mergansers, of course, they got bills with serrated little teeth in there, because their main diet is small fish and fish eggs and things like this. So they need those teeth to hang on to them when they catch them. But
well, they're fascinating birds, and they're just beautiful, beautiful birds to see, aren't they?
Very, very much so. Yeah, especially in their mating colors. You know, when the drakes get all the colors, and they, you know, put on their courting dances for the females and whatnot like that. They are very, very beautiful. And especially a lot of the sea ducks are, with the exception of like the king eider and the harlequin, are pretty much black and white. But for a black and white bird, they are very, very beautiful.
Yeah, they sure are. Nicole, how did you and Craig decide on a museum?
Well, that I have my background in conservation, and I'm more an advocate for habitat conservation. I just feel it's so important that we get that information out to the public. And I was getting ready to retire, and I was thinking, what am I going to do? You know, I don't golf, and there's a lot of things. And I just wanted so much to explain and be able to provide this information to the public. And so I'm looking around, and I'm like, well, Craig has all these bird mounts, and we had the prints, and we have decoy collections and duck call collections. And I'm thinking, I can put this all together, and you know, we can do something good. So we just wanted to do that. That's how it came about.
That's really, and Craig, you've hunted your whole life, haven't you?
Yes, since a very early age. My dad was a hunter back in the days, and I grew up in a hunting and fishing family, you know, and, you know, we ate a lot of wild game growing up.
And have you done any taxidermy work of your own, or did you always have these done?
No, I did start doing a little taxidermy. I did upland birds and stuff early on, but a good friend of mine right out of high school, he's got into the taxidermy business, and over the last 40 years, he's mounted all the ducks I have here in the museum. He's the same taxidermy. He still does it today. He does just a wonderful, wonderful job.
And he does pieces for the DNR, and he does other museums. It's all considered world-class taxidermy. We've had people come in, and their mouths drop open when they see his work, because it's really special. Fantastic pieces.
I think back when I was about 16 years old, I thought I would try my hand at it, and I am not a taxidermist. I can tell you that right now. It is difficult work.
Oh, yeah.
It's an art form too. That's the other part that impressed me once I started to understand exactly everything. There's so much art involved in, of course, taxidermy, but even blowing a duck call, we had a teacher come in, and he was just going crazy on the duck calling. And I said, okay, Ron, I got to bring your class into the art room now so we can talk about the waterfowl art. And he says, Nicole, we want to tell them about the art of duck calling. And I thought, you know, it that's an art, too, because, you know, it's not easy to blow a duck call.
You know what? I have one of my former students, actually, a while back now, was a champion duck caller, and he used to go to my broadcasting studio in the evenings, and he'd practice there because the people where he lived weren't crazy to hear him practice his calling.
Well, Craig won't blow his calls here because he doesn't want all the ducks, you know, descending down on his property.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, man. So the collection, is it totally, Craig, is it totally your what you've collected in the way of art and decoys and so forth?
Well, a lot of the decoys and the duck calls, a lot of them are my brother's. He's also been a collector for many years. But all the species here, I've harvested all them over the years, you know, from high school on. And the taxidermy work is good. I mean, I've got birds that were mounted in 1969 that looked like they were mounted yesterday.
Isn't that amazing? How many species do you have represented in the museum?
I believe we got 47 or 8 species and over 80 mounts.
Oh, and then in addition to that, other things as well.
Yes, in the decoy collection, duck call, and in the artwork, and in the history, and some paraphernalia from the years gone past, you know, things like this, you know. So we do a lot on the history of it and the science end of it, and, you know, the flyaways, it explains the different flyaways and the banding of the birds and things like this.
Do you still get out and hunt?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit. Actually, I was just in Alaska in the Bering Sea this January, where I harvested a king eider for the museum here.
Oh, very, very cool. Well, and I know you have to leave today at noon, but Nicole's going to stay with us. But what's been the biggest source of pride for you in all this?
Well, it's educating the people, really. I mean, we live on a piece of property. We have 40 acres in WRP, was Wetland Reserve Program. We got over 60 acres in prairie grasses, which enhances the ducks. You know, and I do a lot of we got wood duck houses out there, mallard hen houses, nesting areas for Canada geese and this kind of thing, and we promote everything about it. And, you know, people say, well, they just do that so they can shoot more birds. Well, that's not true. I mean, we produce more birds every year on that little piece of land than I could possibly shoot. So it's very rewarding, you know, to have a resource, a renewable resource like waterfowl, you know, and to help out the cause. And, you know, it goes all the way down just to the purification of water, of having a good wetland habitat area. And that's what we're losing every year, is all this habitat. So, you know, if individual landowners and people would take a little pride in it and, you know, set back and look at the big picture of things, I think it'd be very rewarding, as it is for us, you know.
Greg in Wauwatosa wondered if how he should clean his duck mount. If you've got a mount and it's, I would expect, if anything, it'd be dusty if it's sitting.
Oh, yeah. If it typically, like if the feathers get a little wrinkled and stuff like that, you can just stroke them with your fingers, or else take another feather, a heavy feather, like a wing feather of another bird, and stroke it. But you can lightly dust them. You can lightly wash them with a wash rag, you know, and you just don't pull the feathers out, of course. But, I mean, dust is the biggest problem on any of the mounts, and just a hair dryer blowing across it with a wet rag after you rinse it off is fine. It wouldn't hurt it a bit.
Wow. So and you wouldn't put it, just dust
water
first,
yep.
And then if you had a spot or something, you typically water can just water on a rag.
And Dawn dish soap is very good for washing any of that stuff. That doesn't hurt. It doesn't break down the feathers or nothing, but it does really degrease things and cleans it out quite well.
I don't know what it is about Dawn dish soap, but it gets used in a whole lot of things, doesn't it?
Oh, it is. I mean, my taxidermist, that's the only soap he uses for washing, is, you know, wash the blood out of the feathers and stuff like that, and it cuts grease better than anything he's found.
Oh, man. We're talking today with Craig and Nicole Swenson, who've established the Flyways Waterfowl Museum in Baraboo. They did it back in 2013. Talking with them about waterfowl and about their museum. And I hope you'll join in. We're going to take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet. Then we'll be back. Wisconsin loves its waterfowl, and now Wisconsin has a waterfowl museum. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Nicole Swenson. She and her husband, Craig, opened the Flyways Waterfowl Museum in Baraboo in 2013. Craig, of course, an avid outdoorsman, hunted all over North America. Nicole, a master's degree in land resources from UW-Madison. And Nicole is the museum's director, and she'll be talking about the museum. Answer your questions about ducks or geese or swans or other waterfowl. And you may have some questions about waterfowl in your area. I hope you'll join in. Maybe you're curious about certain types of behaviors. Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you, and especially if you've got a good waterfowl story, we'd love to hear that as well, for sure. Nicole, how did you pick Baraboo as the site, by the way?
Oh, well, you know, actually we're right outside the north entrance to Devil's Lake State Park, so we're a little outside of the city, but we thought it would be a good location for people that are interested in nature to come in and learn a little bit more about habitats and waterfowl and birding. I mean, eventually, I'm hoping that maybe this museum could grow to be an entire birding museum. I think that would be so fantastic.
Well, it definitely, and the certainly with the kind of property you have there, just bird watching in that area would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I love about the first section of the museum, which focuses right now on specifically waterfowl and the waterfowl species. We start out with the science aspects of it and explain about the classification. And we have a touch screen so that the visitors can learn about the classification and then go to the touch screen and follow through the procedure where they can then learn more about the duck and touch this little symbol, and then they get to hear the different calls that the various birds make. So we tried to make the museum modern to
attract the attention of the visitors so that they'll learn more. So we have touch screens, we have audio components that go with the dioramas, we have videos, and we even have a little duck blind theater that we changed the show out to go with the new exhibit. Our plan is to add something new to the museum every year. So this year we have this fantastic sea duck exhibit, and you know, people really, I feel like a lot of people don't know about all the different waterfowl species that there are. You know, a lot of people, maybe they don't even, you know the name of a mallard. So that's what we're here to hopefully teach people more about North American waterfowl and then the whole, everything that goes with it.
I agree with you. Living on Lake Monona, I always loved the early spring when the ducks would come in, and we'd see a lot of bufflehead, for example, or golden eye, and other. They're such colorful birds, the seabirds.
Oh yeah, and the hooded mergansers. The kids always seem to, like I said, I have a wall with all the pictures and in the classification system, and then I say now, pick a duck, pick a picture of one of those, and then come over to the touchscreen, and we're going to see more. And they always seem to gravitate to the hooded merganser. And I say, you know, now that you've seen this duck, you remember this, and if you go out into Devil's Lake, there's a good chance you might be able to see some of these birds. And, you know, they get so excited.
Well, they're beautiful birds. There's no doubt about it. I've always had a little... I don't know. I've always kind of favored buffleheads. I just love watching them out on the water. They're fun to watch.
Yeah. Yep. They're cute.
they definitely are. Well, Kathleen in Madison has something for us. Kathleen, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I live in Madison, where there are a lot of the liberal progressive types, and I think a lot of us got the whole hunters killed Bambi's mother kind of thing about hunters. So I moved to Wisconsin in 2008, and I started learning pretty quickly that there's nobody in the state who cares more about the habitat. So that was just a lesson that I would love to share with the, you know, don't kill Bambi crowd that I know they're pretty prevalent here in Madison. Is these folks who do the hunting and care about these birds, they really care, and there are a lot of why, you know, you find a meeting where somebody wants to plow under a bunch of hunting land, they're the first ones there saying, leave our wetlands alone.
It's a good point on hunters and conservation.
Well, Larry, that's pretty much the most important reason why I really wanted to have the museum, and it all ties into, so waterfowl is such a great topic because not only do we have the science, the waterfowl science, and then a habitat conservation and management, but because of the Duck Stamp Act, that ties in with art, so we have all these different components. And you may know, if you can Google U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service duck stamp and even junior duck stamp, 98 cents of every dollar sold on the duck stamp goes back into habitat conservation. So it's just this perfect circle of events. The problem is, and more people need to know this, that as there are less people hunting, there's less people purchasing duck stamps. People don't know about duck stamps. So I really am trying to get the word out about the importance of the duck stamp. A new duck stamp is made every year. It's an artist contest. It's the only federally legislated contest in the country. And hunters have to purchase a duck stamp in order to go hunting. But the U.S. Fish and Wildlife is really hoping that bird watchers will start purchasing duck stamps. They're available at the post office, usually in June, and that money goes back into habitat conservation. So it's very important that people know this. And in the end of September, early October, we will be hosting the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Federal and Junior Duck Stamp art pieces. So that's the reason I want to try and attract people to explain all of this to them.
It's really a fascinating story. It was probably a year or so ago, maybe a little further back, that a gentleman wrote a book about the federal duck stamp and about the artists who compete.
We have that book in our gift. We have got a fantastic gift shop. I have to tell you about that. But The Wild Duck Chase is a book that explains that. And there's also a movie coming out, The Million Dollar Duck.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife is definitely trying to have the American public know about the duck stamp. And can you imagine, you know, that the law has been in effect for over 75 years, and yet so many people don't know about it.
And I think there has been, I don't know, tens of thousands of acres purchased with duck stamp money, if I'm not mistaken, and maybe groups like Ducks Unlimited as well, that have preserved the land and the waterfall areas for, well, ducks, of course, but everything other species associated with them.
Exactly, yes. And, Ducks Unlimited partners and no doubt gets grant funds and things like that to restore and maintain wetland habitat. And there's other partners, too. And I think that, you can go online again, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Duck Stamp. It's USFWS, you know, for U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and then put duck stamp in there. And you'll get, you know, so many choices on things, but one of the things that you can do is you can actually find how much money they've collected over all the years in each state. And what you'll see is that the funds are decreasing because less people are purchasing duck stamps. And that's a really not a good thing, because that's all that less money that's going into habitat conservation. And the habitat conservation isn't just for ducks, of course. It's for all wildlife. So it benefits all of that. And so that's why it's really important to explain that.
Sylvia in Appleton has something for us. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi. Talking about the duck stamp, I'd like this lady to know that the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology, which is bird watchers per se, promotes asking its members to please purchase the federal duck stamp. They even have little plastic holders that they sell if you order it to carry the duck stamp with you so that you can show that you have been buying it.
That is very, very cool, isn't it, Nicole?
Right, yeah. I've been on their website, and also Baraboo just this year became a bird city. And I'm hoping that as we develop more events to promote the whole bird city aspect of the Baraboo area, the Baraboo Range, et cetera, that if I can have the U.S. Fish and Wildlife duck stamp art exhibit every year. You know, every year there's new pieces. And we also bring in schools. We try to get the word out to the art teachers all around so they can bring their art students in to learn about the junior duck stamp. In that contest, they want the pieces. Right now, the requirement is that those art pieces that they submit for the contest are physiologically correct. The habitat has to be accurate. Things that are, you know, specific for the actual species and its habitat. And so it really helps the kids to come and see the ducks, so they can look at them and get a better idea for the differences in the species. And so every year we would like to be able to get the adult pieces that are submitted for the federal contest and even the junior duck stamp art pieces.
Let's go to Annie in Raleigh's Bay next. Annie, thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, up here, Raleigh's Bay is on Lake Michigan, and it is north of Bailey's Harbor in Door County. And we have had pelicans. I was kayaking yesterday through, well, not quite through, but with about 12 pelicans, and some would fly and circle around me. It was pretty amazing. But I'm wondering about pelicans. Are they considered waterfowl? Where do they nest? what can you tell me about these strange pelicans?
Well, I can't tell you a whole lot about pelicans, and I'm actually not the waterfowl expert here. Craig is, but he had to leave. But and I get questions like that, which is why we start off talking about the classification system, because pelicans are not a waterfowl. They're in the bird family, but it breaks down again as we specialize different characteristics of birds. And in this museum right now, we are specifically waterfowl, which is ducks, geese, and swans.
Mm-hmm.
So pelicans, I can't tell you what exactly is the physiological difference that doesn't allow them to be in. The ducks, geese, and swans are in what the family is called a Natidae. And I don't know what pelicans are in.
And in the and within ducks, you have within that species, you have dabbling, as I mentioned earlier. You have diving, and then you have the sea ducks. I think those are the three classes of ducks, as well as swans and geese, as you say, that are part of the North American waterfowl.
Right, and there's something interesting about the sea ducks is they're basically right now, I believe, considered a tribe of the diving duck. Mm-hmm. Subfamily. And, the whole taxonomy, it seems, I'm trying to, keep up with it. It's still changing because they seem to have a little bit of disagreement on exactly how to classify the birds.
Well, you're specializing right now in sea ducks a bit, or featuring them, I guess.
Well, we have, that's our new added exhibit. Last year we did ducks of the Gulf Coastal Prairie. So we added that. It's a little diorama. We have some walls that just have the mounted. We have a lot of different mounts throughout the whole entire museum, but we have a puddle duck diorama. We have a snow goose one, and we have a diving duck one. Those are permanent exhibits, behind glass. And then we have new this year is the sea duck exhibit last year, which is also now a permanent exhibit. So, and then we did the ducks of the Gulf Coastal Prairie, and next year we're planning to do a wood duck. It'll be a special diorama.
Well, there's hardly a more beautiful bird than the wood duck in my mind either. They're really, really pretty birds, aren't they?
Yes, and there's so much art that, that have wood ducks in them, too. So that's going to be beautiful. I switch out things. I change the videos. This year, we built, it's a rather large sea duck exhibit. It's in our back art room. And we have a digital signage player where we have different videos. I switch those out. This year, there's 9 different videos that the visitors can watch to learn about habitat conservation, the Duck Stamp Act, and then I add one with our new exhibit every year, too. So we have this really fantastic one. I love it. It's a long-tailed duck diving down to get mussels. And it kind of just goes perfectly when you're sitting next to the sea duck exhibit. So, and then in our Duck Blind Theater, we have our show that features wildlife in the Arctic. So we wanted to keep they think, oh, maybe that's just some old stuffy museum, but it really isn't. When people come in here, they're just amazed at, everything that we have in here, which I wanted to do because you have to do that to attract the young people. And, you got to have a little bit of audio things. You got to have video things. You got to have things that capture their attention.
And do you give talks at all to groups?
Yes, when we have groups, we do personalized tours. We bring in school groups. We have a nice little deck out here right outside Devil's Lake. So we've sent mailings out to the schools to tell their teachers, and I see the buses constantly going into Devil's Lake. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how can I get these people to know what a great resource we are here? So we've had art classes. We had busloads of second graders here from Lodi at the end of this school year. We've had the Baraboo schools in, of course. But we used to, or I'm not sure if we're going to be able to do it, but we bring in the ag teachers during their conferences to introduce the teachers to the museum, and then hoping they can tie it in when they're maybe taking trips to Madison, and then they can bring their classrooms here too as well.
Now, the museum, when is the museum open?
So, right, we do have what I call seasonal hours. In the springtime, we're open just on the weekends. And then just this Monday, we opened for our summer hours. We're open Mondays and Thursdays through Saturdays, 10 to 5, and Sundays, 10 to 2. So during the summer, we are closed on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, but we're open most other days. And then in the fall, we go back to just Saturday and Sunday till the end of October. And then we're closed throughout the winter when we're working on our new exhibits. But we're also always opened by appointment.
Hmm. Do you have volunteers that help out too?
You know, it's the three of us. we have one person, Mary, who helps us with our school. She's a retired school teacher, and she's been fantastic in reaching out to the schools. She taught agriculture. She was one of the very first women ag teachers in the state of Wisconsin. She taught at Madison East for mm-hmm. I don't know how many years, but she's just fantastic. We couldn't do it without Mary.
I met Mary. She's a very great person, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Is there a cost associated with coming to the museum?
Yes, thanks for asking. We have a modest admission, $7 for adults, $6 for seniors, and $5 for students. Children under 6 are free.
And you have laser games as well there, don't you?
Oh, yeah. That's another thing that I wanted to do to attract the young people, but the guys think it's great, and I think it's great because it's the same software that the wardens might take out to fairs and things, but we have it in a permanent room, so we don't have to worry about lighting because it's a laser, it's accurate, and it's a youth model replica of a shotgun. So if you're not used to hunting like me, I'm not a hunter, so you can get to understand what it takes to be able to, say, shoot at a waterfowl. But we also have a clay pigeon software if you want to learn how to go do that activity with your friends. And there's also one called marksmanship, and there's also one that's like if you're at the fair, shooting gallery
mm-hmm.
type thing. So, and then people can use that and see who scores the highest. So they walk away, and they've had a great time doing that.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, you must have some great experience. You've been open since 2013, but you must have some memorable experiences already.
Oh, yeah. It's just great. I love when the kids come in, and they get so excited, and they ask such great questions. They're so observant. I love, they'll notice things as I'm talking, and they'll say, like, what's that little silver thing on their leg, and I'm like, okay, that's a fantastic question, because I'm going to tell you about bird banding,
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you, it's been wonderful talking with you today, Nicole, and again, your hours, let's go through those hours again, and you're located just at the entrance to Devil's Lake, right?
North entrance, and our website is easy to remember. It's duckmuseum.com.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got our hours there, and right now we're open Mondays and Thursdays through Saturdays, 10 to 5, and Sundays, 10 to 2.
Well, it's been great talking with you. We have a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show as well, so people can just click there too and find you. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Nicole is... Nicole Swenson, I should say, and her husband Craig opened the Flyways Waterfowl Museum in Baraboo in 2013, and it sounds like a fantastic place that they have there now. Good talking with her and with Craig earlier about their museum and about ducks here in Wisconsin. Been just great. And gee whiz, time's out here. Thank you so much for listening. And I hope you'll stay with us. We have lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.